Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are, with Danzy and Corey Club, the podcast you're looking for. This is, yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Club.
Hello, this is Dan Z, and welcome to show number 39 of Coffee with Kenobi, a Star Wars podcast that analyzes our favorite saga in a whole new way. With me is my good friend and co-host, Corey Club.
Hello, everybody. It's been a great summer here at Coffee with Kenobi. We've launched Comics with Kenobi with Matt Moore and Jeff McGee, and the response has been amazing. Matt and Jeff bring you the latest news, discussion, analysis, and interviews from the world of Star Wars comics on a bi-weekly basis. Email the guys at comics@coffeewithkenobi.com and let them know your thoughts on the show. We think you'll enjoy their take on Star Wars comics. Be sure to check out our new bloggers, Mike Audette and Mike McDonald, as they bring their unique talents to the Coffee with Kenobi family.
In today's show, Steve Torok joins us as we discuss our topic for show number 39, Star Wars music. Steve's wonderful music has been a fixture here at Coffee with Kenobi, and we look forward to having a cup of coffee with him as we discuss the inspiration behind his music, the power of John Williams, and much more. This is a conversation you won't want to miss.
We also discuss Star Wars Rebels on Blu-ray, more San Diego Comic-Con exclusives, and an exciting new opportunity to be more involved with Coffee with Kenobi. We also have our next espresso shot with the Bearded Trio featuring Rob Winfer, and introduce our topic for show number 40.
And now, let's see what's brewing in the Star Wars universe this week.
Oh, wait. This is interesting.
You found something.
I'm about to let everyone in on the secret.
For our first news story, we have the debut of Season 1 of Rebels coming to Blu-ray and DVD September 1st. Now, we just came freshly off Season 2 premiere about a week ago, Dan. We recorded that recording for the kind of the summer release that they had, an hour-long debut of the first Season 2 premiere.
Yeah.
And we got to record with our good friend Jeff. And
it really turned out well, too. I was really happy with that discussion.
Yeah, it was quite the discussion. I think we could have talked longer if we had more time. But we're looking at the DVD here and the Blu-ray from Season 1. They'll have 14 behind-the-scenes featurettes, Rebels Recon, which they had kind of after every episode, I think it was, put online. And they kind of had to give a behind-the-scenes look of what was going on in that episode and kind of some of the ideas behind some of the storytelling, some of the characters, stuff like that.
It's fun. It's fun. The Blu-ray has a special feature only on the Blu-ray. It's called Rebels Infiltrate Star Wars Celebration. So that's cool. Maybe you and I will be in the background somewhere. Wouldn't that be fun?
That'd be so great. I wonder if they have the on-stage discussion
the
they
press
had.
Conference.
With, yeah, the discussion they had with all the cast members and Dave and everybody. So that'd be cool.
And then they have the Season 1 shorts. There's The Machine and the Ghost, Art Attack, Entanglement, and The Property of Ezra Bridger. Those are all those little shorts that came out before Spark of Rebellion even aired. And they're all canonical, too, so that's going to be in there. And then the regular, not only will that be on the Blu-ray, but the DVD has these features, too. These are exclusive to both. They're not exclusive at all. The Blu-ray has the two I mentioned. The DVD also has Rebels Recon, the 14 behind-the-scenes featurettes, Star Wars Rebels, The Ultimate Guide, and then a look ahead to Season 2. I'm particularly excited that Rebels Recon is on, and guess why that is?
Why is that?
Because my question on Twitter was
that's right,
so,
that's right. Yeah,
so
Pablo Hidalgo.
Mr. Zare is going to be on there.
You're cemented in Star Wars history.
What? So I'm canonical, right?
Yes, Dan, you're canonical now.
Couldn't resist. So are you going to get this?
You know, I might pick it up just to have a kind of a hard copy, I guess you can call it that. My kids love watching it, so it'd be nice to pop in the DVD player, Blu-ray player, and let them watch away.
It'd be fun to put it on your bookshelf with the movies and then Clone Wars. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. September 1st, Blu-ray and DVD. Be sure to check it out and let us know if you want to get it this way or you want to wait for it to kind of be on Netflix, or do you just want to enjoy them on the Disney XD app? But at least this way, you've got the power to do it. Our next news story is just a quick thing. It just happened the day that we're recording this. The Force Awakens has an official website. You can get to it through StarWars.com. And then right now, it's pretty bare, as you can imagine. It's got the two trailers. It's got some nice stills from the different trailers. And I like the way it scrolls around a little bit. When it loads, it does a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So it's just kind of a fun thing to check out, getting us more excited for The Force Awakens.
So, it's cool. It's got the trailers, like you mentioned, the gallery and downloads and stuff. This is interesting that they would kind of put this out there as a separate entity other than StarWars.com itself. I guess it's kind of it's connected to StarWars.com, but it's a site all its own. There's not much to see, but you can connect via social media all over the place. Looks like they're kind of stretching their muscles there, kind of getting connected and get things ramped up before it hits theaters. But yeah, it's something to keep an eye on. The next news story, we've set up a Patreon page, which seems to be kind of the way of the podcast these days, of getting to folks and fans to want to back their favorite podcast. We've set up our page for anybody who's looking to kind of pledge money each month. We've got different increments and such. This is something that Dan thoughtfully put together and kind of figured out. Dan, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, and I'm just sort of reading off what we put on the website for you. But basically, we do want to make sure that everyone knows our show will always be free. This is purely towards the expense of creating, producing, and recording our show. And, you know, over 100 shows in 2 years. We've been very blessed, very fortunate, and we love it. We want to keep doing this. We're always going to do it. And this is certainly not a way for us to quit our day jobs, because that's never going to happen. I'm never going to stop being a teacher. I don't think you'll ever want to stop being a graphic designer. So it's always going to be free to our amazing listeners. It's just a way to give back to our show. And you and I were talking about this. I mean, a lot of costs come up with these things, don't they?
They sure do. And I mean, it's stuff that we were like, hey, we want to do this, we want to do that, and we're excited about it. It just takes us longer to get there because the funds aren't available at the time. So this would offset some of that cost. Obviously, we're looking to get some more merchandise out there, things like that. Hopefully get some more things rolling as convention-wise. We do have like goals in mind, and those can be read on here as well. Kind of, if you're curious to know what we're going to do with this money, if I start pledging money, what are you going to do? There's milestone goals to kind of look at those too.
Right, and basically the monthly fees just for doing this show, you've got a podcast RSS feed, and the more you talk, the more expensive it is per month. I think that probably goes without saying. It costs money to do the webpage. It costs money to host. It costs money to get a Skype telephone number for exclusive interviews, updating equipment, travel, gas, lodging, transportation, food for conventions. I mean, a podcast can be expensive. You can go different routes, but this is just sort of the direction we've gone with the show. It's been very successful.
I also might say too, Dan, to put out there that, you know, most of those costs we're covering, it's just the onset of wanting to expand more. Too, it's not necessarily doesn't happen, it's not going to, you know, we're not going to stop paying the website fees. So
it just helps our family if we can reimburse ourselves a little.
Sure.
Basically, yeah. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tiers of pledges, and this is, as I said, very similar to a Kickstarter, but it's like a monthly pledge that you do, and it's all sort of encompassed around the idea of coming on the show. Because when we were doing this, we were trying to figure out things to do with sponsorship and things like that. And we thought, well, what is an incentive we can offer so that people would be kind of gracious enough to part with their hard-earned money for a couple of goofballs like us? So we came up with the Coffee Chat prize package. And what would you say that would be?
It's our classic 5 questions. A lot of folks ask about that. And they're like, oh, I want to answer those questions. I want to do that. And that gives us an opportunity to kind of showcase them a little bit on the show and run through the 5 questions with them and receive a special mention as well.
Yeah, well said, well said. So the goal is this. Depending on how much you choose to pledge each month, is how many entries you're going to get into our coffee pot, so to speak. So if you pledge $5 a month, you're going to get 1 entry in the 5 questions coffee chat prize package. And we'll probably do this probably every 2 months or so, depending on what the demand is like and how well this is received. But if you pledge $5 or more a month, you're going to get your name mentioned at the beginning and the end of each show. And you're going to get 1 entry in the 5 questions coffee chat. $10 a month. Another mention, beginning and the end of each show, and you're going to get two entries in the Coffee Chat prize package. So it just kind of keeps going. And on our Coffee Chat, you're going to be on the show list and hang with us, talk with us on the air for 30 to 45 minutes. And then at the end, we'll, of course, ask you our five questions. So that's going to be fun. So those are the first two tiers. Then we jump to $35 a month. You get the mention in the beginning and the end. You get 10 entries in the Coffee Chat prize package. And you're going to receive a Coffee with Kenobi mug and a trading card. So before we move on to the next two, we finally got the mugs ready to go.
That's right. After many trials, Dan.
Yes, much
and back and forth with the good folks at Lucasfilm trying to get things worked out. We finally came up with a design that all parties are happy with, and we're looking to put those out fairly soon, if not in the next week or so. Would you think so?
Yeah, they're out there. And basically, we can't use the word Kenobi if we're trying to put out a mug.
That or, it's...
Anything involving Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain things that you... obviously, they own and one of... you know, take advantage of, and that's rightly theirs to do so, and we respect that, and kind of do all we can to be able to promote ourselves, but yet promote Star Wars as well. So this is the best way we went about doing that, and it was something that we want to get out there too. I think the coffee mugs were something that a lot of folks are asking about, and clamoring for. So those are available. So very exciting.
They sure are. So they're cool. You can buy those separately. You don't have to donate to Patreon to get one of these mugs. Yeah. So yeah, we'll have those on the website. The third pledge tier, as I just mentioned, you're going to get a coffee mug with that and the trading card that we gave away at Celebration. Then we move to $50 or more a month. All the same prizes before, the mention, the beginning of the end. This time you get 25 entries in the five questions coffee chat package. You get the mug and the trading card. And then for this one, the $50 a month, you get to select a topic to be discussed on the show, and you get to co-host that segment with us, which is pretty cool. So
if
the topic is like the one we have now, the music and Star Wars, you could be on with us and Steve Turok, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty good because it's slated to, you know, availability, obviously, of the guests. And what we can do in scheduling stuff, so it's kind of limited to that. I would put that out there because I know folks want to have something in mind. We'd certainly try to line that up the best we can.
Yeah, because this is purely just to be join us for the topic.
Sure, and the topic would be something that we could discuss with the winner as well. So it's something that's going to be, you know, kind of more time consuming and not necessarily be a quick turnaround on.
Right. Good point. So then that's the fourth tier. The fifth tier, the final one, this is the big one, Corey. This is like the the heavy hitter. It's $100 or more a month, and you get everything we mentioned before, the beginning and the end of the show. You get a mention. This time you get 50 entries in the coffee chat. The coffee chat, before we go on, is a whole separate show. It's just you. So if you do the $100 or more a month, the 50 entries in the coffee chat, you get the mug, the trading card. And you not only get to select a topic to be discussed in the show, but you join us for the entire show from the very, very beginning to the very, very end. Emails, discussion, news, everything. And you also get to select the guest that we're going to reach out to. Now, to be fair, this is not a guarantee. You can talk to George Lucas or Freddie Prinze Jr. or Dave Filoni or Pablo Hidalgo, because we don't get that. And we can't speak for our friends, our Java Brew Crew, as Freddie coined it. So you could say, hey, I'd really like to talk with Vanessa Marshall. And then we'll just have to take the ball from there and see what happens. There's no guarantees. The guests have to approve it. But once we find something that we settle on, we will settle on someone for sure. You get to be the whole show. So $50 a month, you get to be on the discussion segment. $100, you get to be on the entire show with us, co-host the show with us. So I think they're pretty cool prizes.
Yeah, and the other thing too, I mean, we're obviously out constantly looking for folks to be on our show too, so it's kind of a mix and match thing. So it's something that we're still kind of, you know, see regarding how many folks get on board here with some of these entries. Mm-hmm. Still kind of pending, if you want to call it that. So it's we still have our schedule lined up for you know, the rest of the summer into the fall and the winter, of course, you know, it's all bearing on scheduling and stuff like that. So.
Sure.
If you're looking for something specific, obviously reach out to us, ask us questions, and what you're looking for, and we'll try to help you get to the right pledge you're looking for and the right kind of fit you're looking for. I think that'd be a good opportunity to be able to reach out to us first for you're looking to pledge and what you're actually wanting to do. So if you're confused in what we're talking about here now, contact us, let us know what you're looking at, want to do, and we can certainly help you out.
Right, and hopefully the website itself will be pretty clear for you. And this is sort of the goals that we have for ourselves. On the left side of the page, we've got, I broke it down into four categories. If we, as like a collective, if you and I as a show earn $55 or more a month for the show, basically what that does is it meets our expenses for the month, including the podcast fees, the website, Skype, and even allows us to do even more shows each month. So that, and we labeled that a cup of coffee. So if we make $55 a month, whether it's one patron or 100 patrons, boy, wouldn't that be something?
That'd be great.
That's what that is. We put $100 a month. We get all the above goals, and we also get to improve, modify, and add to our podcasting equipment. And I'm happy with what we have, but there's always room for growth.
Sure. I mean, there's constantly different changing technologies. You know, one of the things we do try to keep up with as well is some of the technology we use does have upgrades, and that costs, you know, a couple of bucks here and there. And so it gets, you know, the best we can do. Like we just mentioned tonight, we were trying to set up for a different interview, and we had to get some more software, and it was just took, you know, some money out of our pocket as well. So we did some of those things that we didn't expect, I guess you can call it that, yeah. But it's something we needed to be able to conduct the interview. And you know, it's stuff like that. I think it's relatively pretty common in podcasting, right. Pretty common in recording and such, and keeping things up to date. So definitely something we want to try to keep on top of as things come up.
Right. And then we've got How About a Refill, and then Official Member of the Java Brew Crew.
Yeah.
And basically what that does is it shows you what we would do with those funds. So whether you pledge nothing, whether you pledge $5, $10, $15, whatever you want to do, we're still going to bring you the same show. This just allows us to kind of help out our families who help us so much and allow us to do the show and offset some of our expenses. So let us know what you think. We look forward to hearing from you. And we hope to add a fun little video to this webpage as well.
And now, your espresso shop with the Bearded Trio.
Hi everybody, welcome to another Espresso Shop with the Bearded Trio. I'm Rob Wainfer, bringing you all the latest news on Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, and John Williams. So as I record this, Jurassic World is in its third weekend, and it's still clawing on to that number one spot. It really doesn't want to give it away. This weekend, it took the number one spot once again and made $54 million in the US, beating Disney's Inside Out, which made $52 million. And in third place was Seth MacFarlane's comedy Ted 2 with $33 million. So overall, as of June the 28th, Jurassic World has taken $500 million in the US alone, and foreign box office sales has made $745 million, making it well over $1 billion in takings. It's likely to be the number one movie of 2015. I know you're all screaming, what about The Force Awakens? But that's likely to creep into 2016, making it the biggest movie of 2016. But we'll see. It could be that The Force Awakens just blasts everything out of the water in the first few weeks, making it the number one movie of 2015 and 2016. We shall see. DreamWorks Studios have picked up the feature film rights to Michael Crichton's novel, Micro. Frank Mashall is on board to produce. Micro was an unfinished piece from the Jurassic Park author, who sadly passed away in 2008. Richard Preston completed the story in 2011, and it ended up being a bestseller. Now, Micro is a high-concept thriller that follows a group of graduate students lured to Hawaii to work for a mysterious biotech company, only to find themselves miniaturized and cast out into the rainforest with nothing but their scientific expertise and wits to protect them. So it sounds like a cross between Jurassic Park and Honey, I Shrank the scientists, I guess. Steven Spielberg is very excited about the project that DreamWorks are picking it up, and he said, "We are so pleased to have this opportunity to develop Micro," said Steven Spielberg in a statement. For Michael, size did matter, whether it was for Jurassic's huge dinosaurs or Micro's infinitely tiny humans. As we get more information from this new project from DreamWorks, we'll keep you informed here on your Espresso Shot with the Bearded Trio. As you've probably already heard on the news, it's sad to hear that James Horner, a fantastic composer, died at the age of 61 in a plane crash. Some of the great soundtracks that he composed, such as Apollo 13, Titanic, and A Beautiful Mind, are some of my favourite, and the composer will be sadly and greatly missed. He was the composer of choice for director James Cameron, and Ron Howard tweeted, "A brilliant composer, James Horner, friend and collaborator on 7 movies, has tragically died in a plane crash. My heart aches for his loved ones." James Horner, you will be missed. Here's a new feature called News Burst, where I just storm through the rest of the Bearded Trio news in just 90 seconds.
Hold on to your butts.
ILM announced the formation of ILM X Lab to deliver interactive imagery and also to focus on virtual reality. They have a video on their official ILM YouTube channels worth checking out, where they show you some of the work they've already got up to. Happy anniversary, happy 10th anniversary to War of the Worlds. 10 years ago on June the 29th, Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds hit the big screen. Also, happy 14th anniversary to Artificial Intelligence, which also hit the cinema screens on June the 29th, 14 years ago. Noah Weil of Falling Skies has said that the 10 episodes of Season 5, the final season, are going to be some of the best that they've ever done, and also promises a very strong ending to the series. Steven Spielberg attended the E3 event at the Los Angeles Convention Center and was spotted playing the latest Forza game, the Forza 6 racing game for the Xbox One, sporting a BFG cap. Kathleen Kennedy, the Lucasfilm president, has joined the board of counselors of the USC School of Cinematic Arts and joins greats such as George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. And finally, once again, Frank Marshall has taken to the internet to say there have been no discussions yet on Indy 5. That's it. That's your news burst on the Bearded Trio. That wraps up another Espresso Shot with the Bearded Trio. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you check out the website, thebeardedtrio.com. We got some fantastic articles over there, including a review of Lego Jurassic World from Jedi News' John Hood. So make sure you check that out. Also check out our Facebook and Twitter pages as well, and give some feedback. Let me know if you love the Espresso Shot with the Bearded Trio, or if you hate it. I can take it. Also, if you're going to be at London Film Comic Con, which takes place on July the 17th for the weekend, then if you're there, look out for me. I'm there. I'll be wearing a Bearded Trio t-shirt, so make sure you just tap me on the shoulder and say hi. So that's it from me. I'll hand you back to your regular host now for Coffee with Kenobi. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Han Solo, Rebel Soldier, Lando Calrissian, and Bespin Guard, each sold separately from Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back Collection, new from Kenner.
Looking? Found someone you have, I would say,
Your lightsabers will make a fine addition to my collection.
Our first collector news story is we're going to look a little more closely at some of the San Diego Comic-Con exclusives. Jeff and I talked last show about the Hasbro, what they had to offer with the Black Series, but Jack's Pacific has some announcements. Toys R Us has some cool stuff going on. Gentle Giant's got a Boba Fett prototype mini bust. Funko, basically Lego. I mean, they're all over the place. What'd you think?
Anything yeah, they're
staying out for you.
You know, we talked about the Vader looks pretty cool. The Star Wars Vader exclusive from Jack's.
You're talking about the Ghost one, Jack's Pacific?
Yeah, the Jack's Pacific. So it's like the hologram.
Darth Vader, yeah.
Is the hologram or is the ghost?
Did you mention that? The hologram. Darth
okay,
Vader.
So it's hologram, yeah. So you said, I think you said ghost. But yeah, it's like Darth Vader's in your hand, or I guess 20 inches is bigger than that. But
yes, it is. This is the kind of high quality podcasting you may be signing up for through Patreon.
We we do the best we can. Okay.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. That's all we can do.
What stands out to you? I mean, I don't think the Boba Fett looks all that interesting, I guess.
It's like the Kanan one I have. It's okay. I'm interested in what you think about the Black Series Rancor.
You know,
did you see that thing?
I did see that.
Wow, the box is awesome.
Yeah, it's huge. And I think it's a cool piece because it matches the Jabba and the whole kind of set, that Black Series set.
Yeah.
It'd be cool to have.
The picture of the Rancor out of the box with his palms up and facing the ceiling is super creepy.
Well, I was going to say, too, the Black Series has done such a good job of presentation. You know, so there's some kind of misses here and there, misfires for the Black Series, but this, you know, they've done pretty good with the majority of things here, and this is looks really great. I mean, I don't think I would pick it up personally, but, you know, it's something for folks out there looking to kind of complete the collection there.
Well, it's all part of Toys R Us. We have a press release on our website about their exclusive collector offerings they're going to have for us. Collector Vector, it's called. And you will be able to buy this Rancor out at stores after the convention's over with, so that's pretty cool. The Legos, there's a fun little Lego collectible here. Star Wars Dagobah set. Funko's got some cool stuff. There's the miniature Boba Fett as well from Gentle Giant. Funko is pretty popular. I've never really gravitated towards these, but you've got an infrared Boba Fett. You've got the exclusive Vader, which is pretty slick looking. You've got the 501st Trooper, and then you've got a chrome 3PO, and then you've got Princess Leia's Boosh. So there's a lot of cool stuff there that's going on. So let us know what you think. I'm sure Jeff McGee's going to be all over this.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing, too, is they've really come strong with some of these exclusives this year. Seems like in the past years, they haven't had many Star Wars-centered exclusive for San Diego, but definitely they got it here, so pretty cool.
This is Steve Torok, saxophonist and composer. My new album is Eye to Eye, and you are listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Luke, you're going to find that many of the truths we cling to depend greatly on our own point of view.
I must be allowed to speak.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
Our topic for show number 39 is Star Wars music. How does the music of Star Wars add to the tapestry of the saga? What are some of the more powerful pieces of music? Joining us to discuss the music of Star Wars is Steve Torok. Steve's beautiful music has long been a staple for Coffee with Kenobi listeners, as his jazz music has set the mood for many conversations. Eye to Eye is one of the most requested albums for Star Wars fans, and once you've listened, you will instantly know why. It is a huge honor to have a cup of coffee with Steve. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks. I really appreciate that. And thanks for having me on the show. It's really, it's an honor. Thank you.
Well, thank you. The honor is all ours, my friend. As we were talking earlier, when we first started conceiving Coffee with Kenobi, we spent, Corey, 8, 9, 10 hours trying to find music that we thought perfectly encapsulated sort of the mood and tone of our show. We wanted to be conversational. We wanted to feel like you're having a cup of coffee. And we stumbled upon it. And, Corey, do you remember what you thought when you first heard Eye to Eye?
Yeah, when I first heard it, it was dead on perfect. It was something I'd never before done, like taking Star Wars music and somebody to kind of give it a jazz pop mambo to it. And it fit what we were looking for perfectly. We wanted that background atmosphere of a coffee shop, kind of that free-thinking ability to kind of a whimsical feel to it. And Steve, your work has been incredible and we love it. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you for saying so.
It's true. So Steve, we haven't talked about Star Wars music. We've been on the air for over 2 years, but we've never talked about Star Wars music. And full disclosure, we were saving it for a musician, and you were certainly the right man for the job. So what is it about the music of Star Wars that speaks to you?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know how much of it is just, you know, my age and growing up with it. I mean, it had a powerful effect on me even when I was a kid. I saw the films for the first time, you know, and it's just so, you know, it's so memorable. I mean, John Williams, you know, the composer, you know, he has this incredible ability to create you know, they're kind of simple, but at the same time, they're memorable and they add so much to the film. I mean, you couldn't even imagine the film without the music, you know, it just wouldn't even work.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's, I think the music itself, like you said, is so much, conjunction with the movie itself, the iconic images and the iconic lines and stuff. So you're right. The music itself is just goes right along with that. And John Williams does an excellent job. So, to you, how does the music of Star Wars add to the tapestry of the saga? And how does that kind of, you mentioned that, you know, you grew up with it and saw it on the screen. How is it for a musician side of things?
Well, I mean, you know, it's brilliant composing. You know, I've been thinking a lot about it the last few days about, especially the last few days about, you know, the music itself, the influences that are in the music from 20th century composers. You can really hear, you know, Aaron Copland, you can hear Gustav Holst, you know, the way the brass are brought forward, the melodies being played on French horns, haunting and powerful, you know, huge orchestras like late Romantic period. It's just, I mean, it is that through line through all of the films, you know, I mean, it's that through line that connects everything, and you feel comfortable, you know, regardless of which episode you're watching, you really feel comfortable because it's like that. It's like you're in a familiar place when you hear it. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. And there's so many things that, you know, sort of reverberates through the souls of our childhood. I'm guessing you're probably around the same age as us. I saw the first one when I was 5 years old back in 1978. And it's something that stays with you, as we said. So clearly we know there are the mainstays, but what are some of the more powerful pieces of music that speak to you? And feel free to include The Clone Wars or Rebels by Kevin Kiner if you want to.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I've had a certain affinity that the Imperial March has always been something that, you know, I love to listen to. And I had the soundtracks when I was a kid as well. You know, I went out and got all those and I would listen to them quite a bit in my parents' basement, probably playing Star Wars. So there's, you know, that one really resonated with me. And the main theme resonated with me as well. And then the you know, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. I can't remember what that one's called.
Force theme, I think.
Force theme, okay. That one I've always thought about, you know, when I wrote the arrangements for the project that they were originally created for. I had wanted to include that one as well, and I ran out of time, but that's one of my other favorite themes from the movies. So,
you know what, now that I think about it, and I should know this because when I got married, we left the church to the song. So shame on me for not knowing, but it's the throne room theme.
Throne room,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Don't tell my wife I screwed up. Oh, she'll probably be like, whatever, at least you got married.
She thought it was Superman anyway, so that's okay.
No, she knew.
Right. It's that more like, you know, when he's on Tatooine and he's kind of looking off into the sunset.
Oh yeah. Binary sunset. Yeah. Beautiful.
Right. Right. It's that rendition of it that I always enjoyed so much, you know?
Gotcha. So let's talk about Eye to Eye. Music itself, is a great jazz ensemble. You're wonderful crossover and the genre there. How did the album come about for you?
Oh, you know, a long time coming. I was collecting work through the years that I had written or, you know, never recorded, but performed live with various groups. And I get, at some point I realized that I had quite a collection of arrangements that I had written, and original things. And so, you know, it kind of made sense to try to do a project. And you know, it was actually, I think it was my wife's idea who she said, you know, well, we have to record this stuff, you know? And so that kind of got it all going. And it's funny, you know, you think about, you know, you do all this writing and all this performance and the idea that you would then, you know, do your own project could be a little daunting at first. You know, I mean, I've been involved as a studio musician for years before that. And I worked on other people's projects and I had a smooth jazz group that, you know, I was part of that had a national release. And, but those weren't my own personal babies. You know, I had to share them. Mm-hmm. So this one was, I was in total control of, you know, I mean, from production to writing the music, the arrangements, the hiring the musicians, studios, producers, production, mixing, artwork, you know? So actually that's really kind of fun. It's fun to be in that position.
Oh, it's great fun. So the album itself, as we said, we could gush forever about it. It's not only one of the sort of the soundtracks to our show, but just to everyday life. I mean, it's really relaxing just to listen to it. So how did you select the particular pieces of Star Wars music for the album? I mean, clearly we have some mainstays, but there's so much you could have chosen from, but those spoke to you for whatever reason.
You know, that was part of a project that I originally did. Okay, the story is interesting, I hope. When I was teaching at a college, and one of my students, who is a great bassist, his name's Tim Rather, and he's a huge Star Wars fan. And he had come to me one day with some information about the Star Wars Celebration.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular one that was coming up was Star Wars Celebration 3.
Oh, Indianapolis.
Right. And he had basically an application that they were looking for community ensembles to perform Star Wars themed music. And so he said, can we apply for this? And I thought, this is a little outside, you know, the jazz venue, but it sounded like fun. So he and I put together this application and sent recordings in to, you know, to Star Wars, to Lucasfilm. And then months went by and everybody forgot about it. And then I got an email from Mary Franklin.
Yes.
Saying that she would like to bring our group out and have us perform. But would it be possible? Because at the time I hadn't written any Star Wars music yet. So, you know, would it be possible for us to do something, some of the major themes that people would know, you know, as part of our performance? And so I started, first of all, very exciting.
Oh, I'll say.
Yeah, I know. And I started thinking about all of that and driving around in the car and, you know, just coming up with different ways that actually the first thing I did was I did research and I looked into the music that had been recorded for Star Wars. And there was actually nothing. There was virtually nothing. You know, I mean, it was shocking to me that more musicians hadn't, you know, created versions of this music. So there was nothing that I would be able to pull from that already existed. The well-known jazz bassist Ron Carter did an album in the 1980s, 1983. It was called Empire Jazz. It was basically jazz versions of tunes from Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah. We have that as well. That's good stuff.
Yeah, it is. It is good stuff. But it was a little too, maybe a little too eclectic.
I agree. It's very dated.
Yeah. And I wouldn't think that would connect with, like, you know, a huge room full of avid Star Wars fans that were just wanting to have fun. So I started working on the arrangements and rehearsing the band, and Lucasfilm and Mary, they were really great. They paid for everything. They put us up in nice hotels. They got it's Lucasfilm. They got the state-of-the-art sound system and the state-of-the-art sound technicians. And, you know, we were treated really well. And so I took this college band out there and we did this huge performance, and we played for the Thursday evening was the opening ceremony. And there were like 5,000 people in the audience. And none of these students had ever performed for 5,000 people before. And so it was just a huge thrill. And the reaction, you know, the opening of the Imperial March theme that I wrote, just the kind of New Orleans-y ba 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 ba. And the crowd just went nuts. It was like, you know, you're rock stars. And so, you know, the whole experience was really exciting. And it was really fun to be at the convention. But it took me a long time to get back and get together a body of work that I would actually want to put into an album. I hope I'm not talking too long here.
No, this is perfect.
This is excellent. I love that story.
Talk longer. Nobody wants to hear us. They want to hear you.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you mentioned a good point, Steve. You've got the main theme, the Mambo theme. We have the Imperial Funk. We use the Cantina Swing on our outro. What are some of the other Star Wars themes or music pieces you'd like to cover?
Well, as I mentioned, I would like to cover the Throne Room song.
Oh, please do.
Yes.
Would like to. And I would like to, you know, there's some stuff from, I think it's from episode one. I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but
Duel of the Fates.
Yeah, Duel of the Fates.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it'd be really fun to cover, you know, and there's, I have a long history of, there's a long tradition in the jazz. There's a long history in the jazz tradition of taking, writing arrangements of standards, right? I mean, that's what everybody does. You know, you write arrangements of Summertime, you write arrangements of Blue Skies, you write arrangements, like on my album, some of the other tunes. And that's such a longstanding tradition to do that, you know, to perform music that people know from in a different way and to be able to put your own stamp on it, bring something new to the tradition. So, you know, if anything is a standard, these Star Wars melodies are standards, you know, maybe not in the sense that jazz musicians think about standards, but in the sense of pop culture. I mean, everybody knows these songs, you know, so to pull them into the jazz tradition and give them that treatment turned out to be really gratifying for me and also really right in line with what I do as a jazz musician. I mean, it's an extension of the tradition. It's nothing unusual for, you know, musicians to do that.
Certainly not. And, we know just from sort of a lot of the behind the scenes and making of, George Lucas has often compared jazz music to Star Wars in the process of creating a film. So for you and for your mind, since you have such a unique perspective on this, how are jazz music and Star Wars similar?
Well, you know, I was thinking about that question. Jazz music and Star Wars. I think that there's a rich cultural, a culture of musicians and listeners that enjoy jazz, and the way that jazz is created is also very interactive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's somewhat similar to, obviously, to the way that, you know, all artistic projects are created, but also in the way that this culture of Star Wars has grown up around the films and all of the other media. It's just this idea that people identify with it and they're able to express themselves through it. You know, and I think that in that way, jazz is a very similar phenomenon. I mean, musicians express themselves through the music. They connect to it and they interact together on stage when they perform it. And I think that's kind of similar to the kinds of things I was seeing when I went to the celebration, just this culture of people that share and connect and, you know, have that love of the movies and that mutual experience in this place where they're, interacting and expressing themselves through the films.
I love that perspective, and I thought for an instant there you're going to say that jazz is faster and more intense, but maybe that wasn't the case.
But no, I don't think so. Anything that people feel passionate about can become that for them, and so, you know, jazz is created in this interactive environment, and I think that the films were created that way. And then the fans have that relationship as well.
Very true. Very true. And, you know, as we talk about jazz music and some of the pieces you've done, you know, Dan and I always kind of talk about what he's going to come up with next. So what are some of the things that we look forward to hearing from you in the future?
Well, you know, I've been writing ever since the album was completed. I had continued writing new music, a lot of arrangements. I don't know how many I've written. And so, as soon as, you know, my goal is to do another recording, you know, I hope to do that, in the near future. There's no definite plans. I'm kind of working on promoting, Eye to Eye right now and seeing what can happen from that. And then I certainly have enough material to do another album. I mean, been doing a lot of writing, and one of the more interesting, at least for me, things that I've been exploring is the juxtaposition of klezmer music and jazz, And I've been able to work with some pretty talented klezmer musicians, and basically giving that, you know, which would be traditional folk music, kind of like a funky modern twist, and bringing those styles together. And so I've written a bunch of arrangements sort of in that vein. And then just, you know, other projects I've been working on. I keep busy, you know. I'm hoping to be able to work on another CD in the near future.
Wow, that sounds very, very cool. I wish I could be a fly on the wall just to see sort of your recording process. And Lucasfilm was so great and so supportive of you for Celebration 3, which I was actually at. Wouldn't that have been ironic if we ran into each other at that time? But how are they with this album and just sort of in your encouragement from their camp?
You know, I haven't really been able to connect with them as I would like to over the album. You know, I had sent when I originally, as we know, I had completed the album in 2012, but I hadn't been able to really release it nationally until this year. And so so for me, it's a new, you know, it's new. It's not new. It's both. I think back in when I finished the recording back in 2012, I sent some copies to Mary and she really liked it. But I haven't been able to really find a connection. Maybe this will help. you know, it's interesting. One of the things that, you know, the whole process was gone about through the Lucasfilm fan division through Mary. And she asked me to write these arrangements, not specifically, but in general. And so so one of the things I had learned after that was that John Williams is very, very possessive, or very, very protective. I should say not possessive. Mm-hmm. He's protective of his music and he doesn't want people, you know, what's the word?
yeah. I'm trying to think of a positive way to express it. yeah. He wants to, it's his baby. He doesn't want to have just anybody babysitting.
Right. And he wants to protect the integrity of it, you know? And,
that's
and
right.
So I totally respect that. And what I had discovered after the arrangements were written and recorded was that he probably would not have given me permission to write them in the first place if I had asked him. But because of Mary and because of the Lucasfilm connection, it was a moot point because they're all sort of under the same, it's the same umbrella.
Sure.
So it's kind of an interesting I've never met John Williams nor talked to him, but of course I just talked to his people, as it were.
Sure.
And so all very interesting the way it all came about. They had no problem with it in the end, of course, but he just has a sort of a blanket, yeah, I don't think so kind of response to people that want to do things with it. So I was very fortunate to be able to write and record these arrangements. In the way that it came about, you know, it was very, well, quite a blessing for me, from my perspective.
Most certainly.
Yeah. So I'm glad. Otherwise, you know, there's a few things out there. I know if you look into it, there's a few covers of the various tunes, but hardly anything. So it is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Speaking of John Williams, we obviously have episode 7, The Force Awakens, on the horizon. Right. Are you looking forward to the themes coming back with John Williams doing the music with this? Any thoughts on that?
A few. I'm really excited that they didn't, you know, that he's still going to do it. Cause you know, sometimes, as we know, down the road in sequel land, they occasionally go to different composers. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is different, but we've seen that with so many film franchises where, you know, in fact, John Williams was, you know, for Harry Potter, for instance, right?
Yes.
He did the music at the beginning and then, somebody else takes over and they kind of keep his themes, but it's so cool that he's going to, you know, be doing it. And one of the other kind of exciting things is that they're recording it in Los Angeles this time, which all of the other recordings were done with the London Symphony.
Right.
And so I know that from, you know, I'm a member of the Musicians Union in Los Angeles and that organization is very, very excited about the prospect that, you know, the recordings will be done in LA for the first time using LA session musicians. So that's kind of exciting too. It's got more in-house, but I'm really excited to hear what he does with it, you know, and what's new and what's, it's kind of, you know, it's interesting. It'd be cool. He's like the arranger of his own music. So he came up with these melodies, and then he's recreating these melodies and giving new life to them as a jazz musician would, you know, but it's his own music. So it's an interesting thing, and I'm looking forward to hearing what he does with it.
Yeah, the process of, and I'm certainly far from a composer. I'm fortunate that I know how to use an iPhone, but it's pretty amazing the organic nature of orchestral and jazz. And so it's really, we're very blessed to be able to speak with you because you bring, again, such a fascinating dynamic. So we really appreciate you being on, Steve. And before we let you go, we have our five questions that we ask each of our guests, very similar to Inside the Actors Studio with James Lipton, where we try to find some of the commonalities between Star Wars fans because we have so much more that we share than we differ on. So we'll start with the first one, Steve. Sometimes the most challenging question of all, what is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Well, you know, I like Empire Strikes Back. Empire is a little darker, and I don't know. I've always just connected with that film. From the ice, snow
Hot.
Scenes, so mm-hmm. beautiful, yeah, right, so beautiful, to the scenes on Dagobah
mm-hmm.
with Yoda. I mean, I just really, for me, it's kind of hands down on that one. I really like that film.
Okay, your favorite Star Wars character?
Yoda.
Don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I like a lot of the characters, but I do have, there's something about Yoda that is just, he's the character I enjoy the most.
You certainly won't get any argument from most fans on that. So what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
Well, you know, I mean, I love many of the things that Yoda says. And, you know, from a philosophical standpoint, you could do a lot worse than to follow his life philosophy. You know, the do or do not, there is no try. That's a powerful statement. You know, I think for an artist, someone, you know, you have to be in the moment and you have to go for it. And whether or not I've had teachers over the years that were some of, you know, very influential on me, and many of them subscribe to that same philosophy, whether they use the same language or not. One of my favorite scenes actually is the scene in the third film where Yoda is counseling Anakin.
Yes.
And they're talking about, you know, his turning towards the dark side, basically, and,
sure.
and their talk about death.
Wanting to play God, basically.
Yeah. And training yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose. Those are all such powerful statements. You know, they really resonate with me. But one of my favorite scenes, actually, is also from that film. It's the lightsaber duel between the newly hatched Darth Vader and Obi-Wan.
Yes.
That's such a cool, it's cool, it's cool to watch.
Oh, yeah, it's still incredible. I agree.
Yeah.
So, Steve, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
Well, it's funny you would say that because just recently I reorganized my office and I pulled out a bunch of my collectibles. I had, you know, my parents saved everything.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, so I have collectibles from quite different movie genres and different, TV shows. But, back in, you know, in the late, was 1978, I don't know. I had collected as a child, the entire, that first, whatever you call it, that first series of Star Wars characters.
Yes. The original 12.
Yeah. The original 12. I have the original 12, and I also have the Lance. And so the Lance Theater collectible with Luke Skywalker sitting in it is on my shelf. And that's probably my favorite. Still in great condition. It's probably my favorite one.
Well, that's awesome. I'm envious. Are they, here's the big one. Are they in package or do you open them?
No, of course I open them.
Yes. The adult Dan would have, if I was that age, then I probably wouldn't have opened them, but they're definitely all open for sure. I mean, you got to play with those. Those are amazing. So
yeah, I had the Death Star as well.
Oh, one of my faves.
So, yeah. But, you know, it's funny. I went back a couple of years ago. I went back to clean out my parents' attic, and basically all of those collectibles were subjected to like a slow death of melting and, you know, heat. Over the summer, over like 30 summers or whatever, you know? And so, you know, you could, it was like a giant glop of Star Wars, sadly.
Yes.
But as it would turn out, so I wasn't really able to save the Death Star, but luckily some of the other, the figures and the land speeder and a few other things were salvageable and still in pretty good shape, so.
Well, you have that in common with Darth Vader because he couldn't save the Death Star either. So what?
Very similar, yes.
So what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
I would just say that, you know, it's those same themes that I had talked about, that that be mindful of your thoughts and you know, don't allow yourself to you know, think too much about the future, live in the moment. You know, focusing entirely on the project at hand as much as you're able to. Just all really good, you know, ways to live your life. And so those themes that come out through the Jedi philosophy really resonate with me. And so it's one of the reasons I enjoyed the film so much and why Yoda is my favorite character.
Very good. Very good. You know, we'd like to know where folks can get in touch with you online through Twitter or Facebook or whatnot, and where they can pick up your album. I know there's different avenues to getting that album too. Would you mind letting listeners know where they can get in touch?
Sure. You know, my website is stevetorok.com, and I'm on Facebook as well, and there's a link to the Facebook page from my website. I'm thinking of, I have a Twitter account. I'm not much of a tweeter though, but I think I'm going to do that a little more. As far as the album goes, you know, it's available at Amazon. It's available at CD Baby, which is another, if you want a hard, well, actually, any one of those outlets is fine. And then there's another, brick and mortar, outlet. What is that one called? Where you can get the disc itself if you're a person who wants that. And the cool thing about the disc is that, you know, I actually include in the liner notes the story of the Star Wars arrangements and Celebration 3. And something else I should mention now that I think about it that you guys might find interesting that you might not realize.
Sure.
The CD Universe is another place you can get it. So it's iTunes, Amazon, CD Universe, CD Baby, other major retailers. But what I was going to say was that the last track on the album has elephants playing percussion.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. And there is something, I was involved with a project at the Los Angeles Zoo years ago to do behavioral enrichment for the elephants.
Wow.
And my wife, Lori, was inspired by sort of that dream she had. Also, her knowledge of this group in Thailand called the Thai Elephant Orchestra, which is an elephant sanctuary that raises money by putting on concerts that the elephants perform on instruments that they built for them. And so I had one CD of theirs, but never had thought that would be something that I would end up doing here in the States. We proposed the project to the Los Angeles Zoo, and for a year, once a week or so, we would go to the zoo and work with these one Asian, one African elephant, and teach them how to play xylophones and cymbals and drums and tambourines. And it was really quite amazing to watch that process. You know, for example, the way that we shake a tambourine, they can't really do, but they figured out how to do it in a musical way, all on their own, you know, just to get the sound. And they really connected with it. In fact, one of the elephants they had considered to be a sort of a hands-off, unpredictable animal. And over the course of the year, her personality changed. She mellowed. She became much more content in her environment. And that was really the point of what we were trying to do, you know? So we ended up doing a concert at the end of the year for a fundraiser at the zoo, and I recorded that concert, and one of those tracks is on I Die.
Isn't that incredible? Like, just the fact that the technology is there and the sophistication of working with the animals and you've been able to capture that. What an amazing thing.
Yeah, it's every now and then you have something in your life that you experience and you don't think it's going to end. And then when it ends, you say, what was that? You know, and that was that for me in my life, you know, that I can't believe I did it. I have photos, so I know I did. And I have recording, but it seems almost surreal now to think back to it and think about being in the enclosure with them and, you know, interacting with them in that way and seeing their sort of alien intelligence, you know.
Sure.
Obviously very intelligent, looking at you with that giant eye, wondering what they're thinking, you know. It's really it was a pretty profound experience. And it's interesting because for me, it sort of connects well with what I was, you know, what I was doing with the Star Wars and the idea, the themes that resonate in the films for me. And to have embraced that project and then to be able to have included it in my album. And I hope that, you know, in the liner notes of the CD, I talk about, you know, donating part of the proceeds to this Elephant Paws. It's a performing animal welfare society, which is in Northern California, where circus elephants and other animals that had been abused or basically just need a home. Some animals that were in zoos that, you know, weren't in environments that were best for them end up there. It's a beautiful, like, many acre facility. It's not open to the public. It's just basically for the animals. They survive on donation. So that's, I want to hopefully be in a position to give some of the proceeds from Eye to Eye to that organization. In fact, one of the elephants that, that we worked with at the LA Zoo ended up at Paws.
Wow. That's great. Well, we will certainly put links to all of this in our show notes to get the album and to your website. And it really is complete truth when we say we've long been fans. It's been such a pleasure to speak with you, get a little bit more of the insights and backgrounds of what made Eye to Eye come to fruition. And we know a lot of our listeners love your music and certainly hoping that they will jump on this train because it doesn't sound like it's going to slow down anytime soon. Thank you so much, Steve Turok, for being a great guest on Coffee with Kenobi.
Oh, thank you so much, Dan. It was a real pleasure. Thanks, Corey. I really appreciate you guys having me on the show.
More to add, do you?
We got an MP3 from our good friend Rob Irwin. He has his thoughts on the music of John Williams and Star Wars. Enjoy.
G'day, guys. Rob from Who Wars here, and I totally agree. The Sixth Doctor did get a raw deal from the BBC in 1986, and... oh, hang on. Sorry, we're talking Star Wars music here, aren't we? Yes. I'm sure it's already been said on the show that choosing your favourite piece of Star Wars music is like choosing a favourite child, flavour of ice cream, or which scotch to try in a well-stocked bar. And, you know, I couldn't agree more. I mean, do you go with Binary Sunset from A New Hope, which, whenever I hear it, and especially when I hear the really delicate harp in the background, I just about tear up no matter where I am. It's a piece of music that is so ingrained in me as a human being. It's amazing. Or let's skip forward to Attack of the Clones, arguably the least favourite Star Wars movie for many, many people, which is some feat considering Phantom Menace. And yet, in Across the Stars, we have one of the most beautiful pieces I think I've ever heard. I could go on and on, but I know you like to keep these audios tight, so let me say, here and now, my favourite piece of Star Wars music is Final Duel from Return of the Jedi. I mean, sure, it's not as grand as Across the Stars, and it doesn't take me anywhere as close to tears as Binary Sunset can, but when I hear it, I'm 8 years old again, and it's 1983, I'm watching Return of the Jedi with my mum and dad, and I'm there watching Luke take massive tree-chopping air swings at Vader and thinking, this is the most incredible thing I've seen in my life. That green lightsaber, the smaller man deciding he doesn't give a toss about living or dying and beating down on the big man in the process. That duel blew my mind, and the music was a big part of it. I mean, what about the choir in the background? Wow. Now, I know a lot of other people like Final Duel, And it's definitely no coincidence that when Williams came back to do episode one, the main theme he did there, some say the best part of episode one, was that massive choir piece, Duel of Fates. I could sit here all day, guys, and talk about Star Wars music, but I'll leave it there. I love the show, and I'll talk to you later.
Our topic for show number 40 is the psychology of collecting. What is the mindset of the collector? How much of collecting is nostalgia? What is collecting too much of a good thing? Joining us on this topic is returning guest, Dr. Andrea Letamendi. In 300 words or less, be sure to send us email or MP3 with your thoughts, comments, questions, and opinions to feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com.
I like the sound of that.
Echo 3 to Echo 7. Hano, buddy, you read me?
I saw part of the message.
I seem to have found it.
Our first email comes from James Jubb, and he writes, "Greetings, Dan. I'm reaching out to introduce myself and my friend who are working on a new podcast. We listen to and love your show. We have been formulating an idea for a podcast covering the Disney canon when we heard the Legends Library podcast. Being avid readers, we like the idea of diving into the novels. We have since launched the show under the title It's a Trap, with original artwork created by Dave Dorman. And it's meant to discuss each piece of the new Disney-approved standard of Star Wars canon with an eye to point out anything new being brought in from the now Legends story arc. We hope to reach people that want to know what happens, but don't have the time to read, watch, or people that have already consumed the story and want to hear our thoughts, what we caught, and hopefully might be willing to let us know what we missed. We've been working with Marshall Carr of The Usual Podcast as we were getting launched. He has also been a guest on our most recent episode and suggested that we reach out to you for help as he has done so in launching his own show. I know that you talk on your show regularly about the greater podcasting community and your willingness to help new podcasts out. We would greatly appreciate any help in this area that you can give us. The two of you have done a wonderful job of networking and forming connections with content creators for Star Wars since the purchase of Disney, and we would like to learn to do the same. From authors of the works we are discussing to the voice actors of the characters a novel is centered on, we think it would be an excellent chance to get their view and impact all this amazing work that has been a part of the Star Wars story. Further, because of the literary angle that you guys have on your show, and the non-spoiler nature of it as well, we would really love it if you would be willing to talk and explore the idea of having one of us, or both of you, on to cover the novels where you can feel free to spoil anything you like." And James has a few other things here, and we're going to put this in the show notes, but it's atrappodcast.com. Be sure to check it out and listen to it. It's great fun. They do a wonderful job, and be sure to subscribe and let them know what you think. Kind of fun too that they're doing it, like they're kind of taking a spoiler approach as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because they want to review some of the Disney canon stuff. It's interesting because there's so much stuff coming out now. It gives a broad spectrum almost to the new canon that's coming out, as far as the junior novels and some of the, you know, stuff we talked about recently, and some of the newer novels for adults and folks. And then, of course, you know, all the stuff's coming out this fall, the Aftermath book and all the stuff leading up to Force Awakens. So they have quite a plethora of stuff coming their way. So a lot of stuff to dissect and look into further. So good luck to you guys. Thank you so much for reaching out to us. We'll help where we can. Our next email comes from Mark Mulcaster, and he says, "Hi, chaps. I've been listening to your podcast for some time now. I admit I haven't explored your back catalog, so please forgive me if I have not offered anything new. I'm halfway through Lyndon Davies' The Editing of Star Wars, which offers some interesting insight into how Star Wars was put together. The book discusses various techniques employed in the editing of A New Hope, as well as breaking down the pace and narrative structure of the film. This is a great introduction to the theory behind film and narrative editing, simply because as Star Wars fans, we know the film inside and out, and so it's very easy to picture the scenes that Davies is discussing. I may be a little biased as I've been editing for just over 10 years, but it's very rare that someone has deconstructed the actual editing process in this way. A lot of the time, discussing about the film editing is heaped in the shot composition breakdowns and directorial decisions that arguably do intermingle into the filmmaking process. So it's great to read a book dedicated to editing in this fashion. Have you come across this book? Have you guys ever discussed the importance of editing with respects to the Star Wars saga? Maybe you could even track Lyndon Davies down and see if he has anything interesting to add. Anyhow, keep up the great work, and I look forward to the next episode. Warmest regards, Mark Mulcaster. He comes from London. Thanks, Mark, so much for the heads up here. This is very interesting. We have not talked a whole lot about the editing portion of Star Wars and how it was put together, especially not necessarily the films. It's an interesting aspect because, you know, as I'm a writer, I think of writing a story, you know, putting it together and piecing it together. But then once that's finished, you have to go back and edit yourself and go back, and I'm sure you do, Dan, as well, that go back and edit anything you write or put together. And so do, you know, filmmakers. You need to go back to what's the best, you know, what's the best shot? What's the best sequence? What's the best, you know, transition, I guess, from place to place and thing to thing, and the getting that just right. You know, it's kind of fine tuning of any aspect of creativeness that folks go to. And I guess there'd be something to really look forward to, maybe talk to, get in touch with Lyndon Davies here and see if we maybe would interested in coming on. And I don't know, it'd be interesting to try this out. I think, what do you think?
I think it's cool. I haven't heard of this book, and the editing idea of the films, you know, that's, I mean, one of the things that George Lucas has always been praised for is his excellent editing and how he clipped the movie together, especially Star Wars, when it was kind of a mess, and he created something beautiful out of his editing prowess. So yeah, that would be interesting to find out about. There's so many wonderful authors out there too. So we appreciate the heads up, Mark, and we will certainly look into this. Our next email comes from Jeffrey Fishbach, and he writes, "After listening to episode 38, I was thinking all about the discussion of Revenge of the Sith. And I guess I'm alone here, but I've always had zero problems with Sith, and as a matter of fact, I had zero problems with all the prequels. I'm a diehard Star Wars fan. I love everything, anything Star Wars. I've always had the motto, there is no such thing as bad Star Wars. But it seems like every time I state that opinion, I get told I'm not a Star Wars fan. Kind of makes me laugh, really, just because it did not bother me when Vader said no. I liked it. It was very powerful and emotional. Or is it because I didn't have a problem with Jake Lloyd or Hayden Christensen? I think they both did a great job in their roles. Or finally, is it because I didn't have a problem with the story? I'm not sure, but all I know is everyone has their likes and dislikes. If you don't share mine, that's fine with me. But I'm just getting tired of people telling me that I'm not a fan or that I'm wrong. Opinions and personal preferences cannot be wrong. Also, I'm always asked by fans to rank the films from 1 to 6, and I can tell them that my favorite is the entire saga. Yes, I'm one of those. I cannot rank them, if I tried. I love each film on its own. Sorry I vented on here like this, but I just had someone message me again about this subject, and after listening to your episode 38, I had to get it off my chest. Just something that's been chapping my butt for a while. Once again, sorry, and may the force be with you." Well, Jeffrey, nothing to be sorry about. And we've had this brought up a few times, but no one can tell anyone what kind of fan they are. I mean, no, there's no special Supreme Court ruling with a judge wearing a Darth Vader robe saying who's a fan and who isn't. I mean, if you like Star Wars, you're a fan, plain and simple. There's no ranking. There's no hierarchy. There's no difference between someone who just saw Star Wars for the first time on DVD, or someone who is doing a podcast or is an actor in one of the films. If you like Star Wars, you like Star Wars. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Dan. And I don't know how many times, I can't count the times that I've heard, you know, somebody who works for Lucasfilm or one of the celebrities or something like that who just say, you know, I'm just a fan. And coming from that standpoint, and the folks that do work in the industry and do work within Star Wars, and are making these stories for us, and they say, "Oh, I'm just a fan. You know, I'm a fan of it because I just enjoy it." That statement there gives gravity to me because they're just one of us. And then even at their landmark, they might be able to say a little more to certain characters and such. But you know, I think the whole idea of being a fan, you're allowed to do it however you want. You shouldn't be ranked. You shouldn't have to give your opinion on everything. You should be able to have your opinion on everything. And it shouldn't be something we shouldn't be discussing at all anymore. I quite frankly, I agree with Jeffrey. I get tired of people kind of coming up with this idea of, you know, well, you're not a fan. Well, you have to be this way and that way. It's not the way it is. It's you're a fan, plain and simple, case closed. Let's just enjoy ourselves because we're having a good time and something we both love. So it's to be able to discuss something in the proper manner and be able to, you know, look both sides of someone's opinion. I agree with that too, because as we do on our show here, I mean, we enjoy to discuss and analyze and break down. And yeah, sometimes you and I don't always agree, but you know, I think for what it's worth, we both respect each other and anybody who's coming on our show. So keep your chin up, Jeffrey, and keep fighting the good fight. And may the force be with you. Next email comes from Stephen Prater, and he says, "Hey guys, I just wanted to write a quick message to you, say thanks for the Comics with the Kenobi episode. I really enjoyed having a show about the new comics. I'm assuming that this will be a regular podcast episode that you guys post. If so, thank you so very much for adding this to the other outstanding podcast you guys do." Thank you very much, Stephen Prater. Yes, Stephen, this is a bi-weekly podcast through our good friend Matt and Jeff, and they kind of, you know, approached us and wanted to do it, and it's something we wanted to do. We hadn't had the time to do it, and I myself hadn't had a chance to dig into the comics all that much, so I've been kind of stepping off a little bit from listening to getting spoilers and whatnot. But I'm excited to put it out there, because it's just a different aspect of you know, our network of shows we try to put out for folks and expand our reach, I guess.
Yeah, and like Jeff said, just hearing Matt more talk about comics, you just sit at the feet of the master, because he's a great guy and a good friend. But he's fun to hear talk about comics, because he knows his stuff and he's very smart, and Jeff is as well. And who doesn't love to hear Jeff wax poetic about Star Wars? So the two of them have wonderful chemistry. It's a really fun show, and we're glad that you like it. We're going to keep bringing it your way. And huge thanks to Matt and Jeff for Comics with Kenobi. Our next email comes from Drew Jackson. He writes, "Hey, Coffee with Kenobi. I'm a faithful listener to your podcast and just listened to your discussion on Revenge of the Sith. I've heard discussions of Padme's death before, and I agree. It's one part of the Star Wars saga that is unclear. Personally, I am okay with some things left to interpretation, but I do have a theory. If someone else has proposed this yet, I haven't heard. I wonder if Padme's death is linked to Leia's birth. From the film itself, it seems Padme is not pregnant with twins. She refers to the baby singular when planning with Anakin. I wonder if the Force used her life to create Leia. This would explain the surprise of her having twins at the end. This could also explain Leia's connection to Padme and having memories of her that Luke does not. The Force uses Leia in Return of the Jedi as a catalyst for Luke's attack on Vader in the Death Star. Then as the eventual redemption of Anakin. I've not worked out all the details of the theory yet, but I think there is something here. I would love for y'all to discuss this. Also, I am going to start my teaching career this year, and I look forward to finding ways to use Star Wars in the classroom. May the Force be with you, Drew Jackson." Well, Drew, most importantly, congratulations on starting your teaching career. Be sure to check out StarWarsInTheClassroom.com, because there's a lot of great resources there, a lot of very passionate educators, so you'll fit in perfectly. And, of course, sign up and join as a rogue. But I really like, Corey, his idea of Padme and the idea that, did she know that she was having twins? Did Anakin know that? Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's interesting that he said that, because, you know, as reading through it here, he did say they were surprised they were twins. And I kind of forgotten about that.
Yeah.
I guess that really makes some sense as far as, yeah, you change, I guess, with the Force create, I don't know. It's like he said, it's left up to interpretation, I think, in a sense. And George doesn't really come off and say, you know, what it is or whatever, or what it, you know, that scene is. It's interesting because there's so many different interpretations of it by fans, you know, her loss or her willingness to live and being able to, you know, get through the childbirth and then losing that, that part of her, you know, dying through that childbirth. I also think too, it's interesting they had the technology to build a Darth Vader suit, but they don't have the ability to see that it's twins. you know, preset to her being pregnant, and yeah, I don't know. It's maybe the technology isn't there yet. The droids don't know. I don't know. That's left up to a lot of thoughts.
Yeah, I think this is a deliciously ambiguous and. I would think, you know, I'm no doctor, but I'm pretty sure that you would know. But that was just conveniently unexplored, and I'm fine with that. But it certainly, this is a talk about a topic that lends itself to so much discussion. We could probably do a whole show just on that
just that scene,
right?
Yeah.
There. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Drew. Very good food for thought.
The next email comes from Ben Bolden. He says, love the show, but please turn off the jazz version of the Imperial March after the opening. It's very distracting to have in the background during discussions. Again, it's been otherwise a great podcast. Another email comes from Josh Luhan, and he says, enjoy the podcast, but I have one complaint. The background jazzy Star Wars theme music during the dialogue is very distracting.
This is ironic, isn't it? Because we have Steve on this show.
It is ironic, and it's interesting because, I mean, to me, the jazz itself is part of the show. I mean, it's a co-host in itself.
The oxygen of coffee with Kenobi.
There you go. I love that. But, you know, it's sometimes, I think it's a technical difficulty, I think, sometimes as far as the jazz music. I do go back and edit. I do listen to each segment, so I do hear the music as well. And editing this, it's something that's, I've played with. We've had a couple of folks that have mentioned it being too loud. I think that just kind of the way the format the music is in, and of course, beholden to Steve's, you know, organizing the arrangement. So it's something that we want to keep in whole. We're going to keep it intact. I think it's something that's lends itself to our discussion. I apologize for maybe it being too loud. I'll still play at the kind of the dynamic of the sounds, but it's something we're going to keep in. I appreciate you guys writing in, kind of giving us these
suggestions.
Yeah.
To be fair, Ben and Josh, we're pretty much just talking about the volume of it, and they have nothing but positive things to say about Steve's wonderful music. And I mean, how could you not? Steve's a very talented musician and a very kind man. So it's not about that. It's more about the fact that it's on in the background. And the purpose for that is Corey so eloquently stated, was that we want you to feel like you're in a coffee shop and there's some Star Wars music in the background. And it sort of loops. And after a while, it just seems to be part of the atmosphere. So I'm happy to hear from Josh and Ben. And I'm curious to see what everybody else thinks too. And I agree with you. It's very much a part of the show. It's our co-host. I can't imagine it's going to go away. But we can certainly adjust the volume and do our best. There are a lot of wonderful podcasts that I listen to, Inside the Magic and the IndieCast, who have the same music on for the most part and have been for years and years. So that's kind of where we got that from. Let us know what you think about the music, the volume, and what you'd like to hear on Coffee with Kenobi. Our last email comes from Alex King, and this is a really exciting email to read, as are all of our emails, but this one is special, and you're about to see why. I wanted to say thank you again for your help with the Kickstarter bump on our podcast. Rusty's Revenge was funded, and we will be making the movie. It was certainly a big boost from your podcast that we received at least a few of the contributors. The day we listened to the podcast that you mentioned us on, we received our biggest support to that date. Thank you so much. And that's, he says, yours in education, Mr. Alex King. So yeah, a few episodes ago, we talked about the Kickstarter for Rusty's Revenge. Mm-hmm. And they're going to make the film, which is wonderful. I can't wait to see it. So glad we could do our small part to help spread the word for you. And congratulations. Enjoy all your success. We can't wait to see this film.
Absolutely, Dan. I mean, like we try to do here, we try to promote everybody's, films or, you know, outside work or costuming or whatever it may be. We try to, you know, bump what we can and put it out there for all the folks to kind of take in and be able to enjoy. And having this done by Alex, we'd love to have him back on and maybe discuss the film for a segment and see where it's headed and once it finishes up and see where it goes. And the process of the filmmaking process too. It's interesting because it's fan driven too. It's so nice to be able to see things that can be kickstarted like this and fans supporting other fans. So we certainly are enjoying this and the celebration. And thank you so much for writing in.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
Give the evacuation code signal.
That's it for show number 39 of Coffee with Kenobi. Big thank you to Steve Torok for sharing a cup of coffee with us and discussing Star Wars music. Be sure to check out his album Eye to Eye on iTunes to download Steve's music.
Thanks to Rob of the Bearded Trio, our media specialist Lisa, our Coffee with Kenobi bloggers, and to everyone who contributed to this show, and all of you out there who listen to and email Coffee with Kenobi each and every week. Don't forget to send us your comments, questions, and opinions on a topic for show number 39, The Psychology of Collecting.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
There's no one here.